Welcome back to Lighter Side, Joe Grammatico, along with Tom Kaliopoulos. How you doing?
Joseph, nice to be with you again this week. Raiding the kitchen for some snacks and waiting for you to call, and I'm looking forward to talking some puck.
Yeah, we're going to talk tonight, go back to the top 31 franchise leaders all time and playoff points with one team, covering 11 through 20 tonight. Before we get into that, though, did you hear the NHL and NHLPA met today, but I don't think they released any info. I tried looking before I called you, but nothing's leaked out from the meeting yet today.
No, it's there's some news that came out where they're kind of moving past finishing the season. We didn't really touch on that last week, last show either. And I believe they're looking at jumping right into the playoffs with a 24-team format. And it's going to basically, I guess the big question with that, Joe, is how are they going to align the playoff structure? Is it going to be top six teams in each of the four divisions, or is it going to be top 12 teams in each conference? And that matters to four cities, and yeah. Chicago, New York, or LA, or not LA, but the Ducks, and who's the other team, Joe?
Buffalo. Yeah, Buffalo was the last
Buffalo,
one.
Buffalo. So, what depends what format, but I believe they should go. I don't know what your take is. I'll get it in a little bit here, but I don't know. I think they should stick with the 12 team in each conference. That way you got the best winning percentages representing, being that it's a shortened season, and you know, that's the best way to do it, you know, without any you know, really any whining involved.
Yeah, I agree. I would take the top teams on each side, top 12 in each conference, and let them play it out.
So I guess they're going to go a 2 out of 3 that first round, and you and I have touched on that numerous times, which we thought that's what it might be. And then I guess the draft itself is going to have the 7 teams that are out, and those top 15 teams still vying for a draft lottery. I think that they're still doing that, or is it just going to be the 7 teams?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't think they finalized. They're supposed to announce this week a final decision. I don't know if that had to do with the meeting today or what, but that was the last news, that they would have a final verdict on how they were going to handle the draft this week.
Well, I'm guessing maybe after midnight you might see something on the, you know, the AP press or whatever, and or some of the news stations, affiliates, and social media outlets, that what's going to happen. It usually is the case, you know, but for sure tomorrow I think there'll be word. So
yeah,
but new rinks. I read a story about regular rink in Tampa, Florida, or somewhere in that area, where a lot of local rinks, youth rinks, are contacting this rink because they were one of the first ones to open up for business again. A lot of, ironically, first responders to the COVID, a bunch of firemen were out there playing hockey in a league. There was a couple fights, actually, but mainly they had this structured process put in place, and it seems to be working. And a lot of rinks in the, you know, or in the country are calling them to get the protocol, and they're going to be implementing it as well. So there's a lot of duplication going on there. They're actually, you know, gapping the games, the schedule, so where the people that are playing have enough time to get out. They're not allowed to shower. 15 minutes to get out of the rink after their game, and then people in the next up in line are still waiting in their cars until those people leave. So they're eliminating the interaction, Joe, within the league,
mm-hmm.
or the rink itself. And the NHL is taking notice of this. It's all this stuff, every little bit helps. So the league seems to be going okay. They did, you know, cut down and make sure the players aren't spitting as much in the locker rooms and on the ice and, you know, that kind of thing. So that actually some of the players were saying that's probably the hardest rule they had to adapt to.
Right.
Mainly because spitting's kind of just like skating and shooting a puck. It's kind of like, you know, just a thing that you do in any sport you play, really, I guess, you know, that warrants it. You know, it's just a habit for most guys, and they're trying to curtail a lot of stuff, and, you know, every little bit helps.
Yeah, and so, the AHL canceled their season. Did you see that? They called it a year.
That's crazy, isn't it, Joe? I mean, you think if the NHL is still holding on, you think they would kind of, you know, be side by side with them. But, you know, I mean, some leagues, financially they can't hold on any further. That could be a big reason for it. Smaller market teams. But I am noticing that if the NHL does come back, there's going to be a lot of like these empty rinks, and they're talking to a lot of players, and how will that affect the game? You're looking at strategies, you know, coaches during timeouts. You know, they probably have to be a little bit more, you know, passive in their demeanor on the bench when they're calling lines out, and you know, game strategy when they're discussing things in between whistles. And you know, the players, the chirping on the ice could get a little deeper because the players are heard more. And but to me, that won't be a big drastic thing because chirping is going to go on no matter how loud it is or how quiet it is. It's just part of the game. So have you heard anything else about anything going on with games within the games?
No.
Gamesmanship?
No, not too much. As you mentioned about the coaches, and we're recording this on May 12th. It's probably not going to come out till May 19th, 18th, 19th when we release the episode. But there's the UFC fight over the weekend. I don't know if you heard this. I just caught a snippet before I went to bed last night. There were some highlights, and I had the TV down kind of low, but the one fighter, so they fought in an empty arena, and the one fighter ended up winning. I guess he was losing the fight early on, and when Joe Rogan was interviewing him at the end, he said that he heard the announcers commentating, and he heard one of them say that he needed to check the kicks, and he said, well, whatever I was doing wasn't working. So I figured you guys were seeing something. I started doing that and it was working. So they're able to take over the fight from there. So there's something to that. They're going to be able to, it already happened over this past weekend in a fight where they overheard the commentators and made adjustments. So the coaches definitely are going to have to take some extra precautions with no noise in the rink.
Yeah, that makes sense, Joe. And you know, as pro sports goes, it's, all about adjustments, you know, from period to period, from 5 minutes spans to 5 minute spans. It's that's how it is. And it's momentum. And, you know, NHL coaches are coaches for a reason. And the good ones always exploit, you know, teams and throughout the game as the game progresses. And the good ones are the ones making the adjustments to pinpoint those weaknesses or soft zones that they're seeing. So I see that happening. Another interesting thing aside from the play was broadcast teams in the NHL, how they're going to set up in these rinks, and it could actually enhance the television viewing. And something I never thought about, but the cameras can actually, with all these empty seats, can be set up in areas of the rink, you know, that might give fans a different viewpoint.
Yeah.
Now, some of the viewpoints, you never think of that, but some of the viewpoints I don't like. I mean, you know, some of them can really give you kind of a bird's eye view of almost like being at the game in the lower bowl of these rinks. So that could be an interesting element too. But getting back to, you brought up the UFC and all that. I was talking to my son the other day about that because he was watching it over his stepbrother's house, and I was just mentioning to him how I was channel surfing because I'm out of the internet right now, and I'm watching TV with rabbit ears right now because I can't get a internet provider over to my house because everything's shut down. But, you know, plus I'm still shopping for one. But so it's relegating me to rabbit ear TV. And I'm on a Friday night, I'm thumbing through the channels there and come up with this WWE wrestling. I guess it's on primetime now on channel 2.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first started doing this before all the shutdowns came about, yeah, you know, you're watching wrestling, and a lot of their efforts through their sport is through crowd participation and using the crowd as part of their act. And they're doing this now without a crowd, and it's kind of crazy. So I kind of paralleled that with how the NHL would do. And you know, it's probably no different than maybe watching a game of shinny, you know, in a local rink.
Right.
So they're talking about putting interactive mics on the players, but you got to be careful with that. The NHL is a game. Hockey's a game based on emotions, and you know, it might not bode well. And hopefully, they have a good censorship because it's a family sport still, and you're gonna have to be careful because some of the chirping that goes on the ice is definitely above R rated.
Right. Right, for sure. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when the news leaks out from today's meeting and see how things progress along. There's a lot to it. Well, hopefully everything works out and they can get things going.
Absolutely.
So yeah, to our list, we're going to cover, as I mentioned, the all-time leaders, franchise leaders in playoff points. We covered 1 through 10. On our last episode, we're going to cover 11 through 20 today. So number 11 takes us to New Jersey. Their all-time franchise leader, surprisingly, possibly, is Patrick Elias with 125 points.
Yeah, Joe, doesn't surprise me, only because I've always been a big fan of this guy. And to me, I'll just say it right off the bat, it's just another reason why, and based on your comment there, that it surprises you that this guy, to me, has always been one of the most underrated players. I'd say if I had a top 10 list of those players, he would definitely be in that top 10 in NHL history because he's one of these guys that kind of flew under the radar, always with a team. And we mentioned this talking about some of the Stanley Cups that we discussed a few weeks ago. This guy played on teams that, weren't the fanciest, not like Edmonton of the 80s when they won. I mean, they usually did it lunch pail style with these left wing locks and, really it's just a neutral zone trap. But, they did it good. They played their systems. The coaches that they've always had were always disciplined as players when they played. They just implemented that when they coached. And this guy, he was probably one of the more skilled players in the league, but he always succumbed to the styles of the teams he played with. And he had a lot of great success in the international level and as well as the NHL playoff stage. So it does not surprise me at all. And the only thing that does surprise me is there's a lot of good players in this organization, but 125 points, that just shows you that they did it with tight to the vest defensive style for sure, Joe.
And he's got a 50-point lead on second place in John McClain, so it's not even close. He's a clear runaway leader in New Jersey. The current leader, Travis Zajac, with 28 points as active.
Okay. Yeah, it's crazy because John McClain was a lifer there, too, with New Jersey, and he did see some tenure with, I think, the Rangers towards the end of his career, I believe, or another team, like that, I believe. But, you got Niedermeyer on that list as well as Gomez and, Scott Stevens even, all the guys that played tons of playoff hockey. So I guess maybe Elias is the only guy, obviously, to probably average over a point a game because I know those other guys played over 60 playoff games.
For sure. Definitely.
So that's
yeah, number 12 takes us out west to the other coast, Anaheim Ducks. Their all-time leader is Ryan Getzlaf with 120 points. he's got a decent lead over his teammate Corey Perry, who sits at 89.
Right. Well, he's going to probably extend that lead if, depending on what format they use in the playoffs, if they decide to go the 24 playoff team push for the cup this year. Depends what format, because his team's either going to be left out on the bubble or going to be one of those top teams if it pans out to the, if they go to the six best teams per division. He'll get to maybe extend that lead on Perry, who's no longer with the organization. But Ryan Getzlaf is a big, rangy forward, built for the playoffs. Always been a really well-rounded player, can facilitate the puck, tough guy to move in front of the net, get the dirty, greasy goals, which you see a lot in the playoffs. And there's no surprise to me that he's 120 points. To me, this team, you know, they always had great talent and good goaltending. It's like I'm surprised they haven't had a lot more playoff success, but they did have to go through Detroit quite a few times, and even Colorado at times as well when they were both in the West. So, you know, it's one of those things where probably played at the wrong time. So, but he could play. He's had success at the international level as well, and well-respected player in the league, and he's kind of in the twilight of his career. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people on the West Coast that would like to see the format, you know, six top division teams so they can get another last hurrah, because I think Getzlaf's kind of at the end of his string here.
Yeah, speaking of end of the string, number 13 is Patrick Marleau, all-time franchise leader of the San Jose Sharks. He's, of course, no longer – is he back with the Sharks for this? I think he was in Toronto.
I think he was in Toronto,
and then he moved either at the end of the year or at the deadline. So, yeah, he's no longer with the Sharks, but 120 points, just five ahead of his longtime line mate, Joe Thornton, who's the active leader with 115, another guy in the twilight of his career.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think Joe Thornton's still over there, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. He'll probably end up passing him, depending on I don't think it won't be this year, but I think the Sharks are on the outside looking in. But, you know, I think a lot of guys on the list there, you know, you got some good young players. I think Hertl could actually, if San Jose starts getting more consistent again, that could be a kid that'll end up leading the franchise in playoff scoring in the near future. But Patrick Marleau is an old pro, you know. He's just an up-and-down winger, probably one of the better skaters in his day. You know, he's a good seasoned professional. Thought he would be a better fit in Toronto. I don't understand why, you know, he didn't stay there, but maybe they were looking to go a little younger, and they got what they got out of him as far as mentoring some of the players, the younger players in the franchise over in Toronto for the, I think, a year and a half that he was there. So, yeah, so like I said, he's just a reliable player, and he's, you know, always, he got a key goals every once in a while, and it wasn't a liability defensively. So it's just one of those things where, you know, you think a guy like that would have had more success over his career as well as in a team award area, but just once again, probably, you know, a situation where he's playing against pretty solid Detroit teams over the years that kind of maybe had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, 14 takes us to the Philadelphia Flyers. All-time leader with 119 points is Bobby Clarke, an all-time favorite of yours.
Yeah, I love Bobby, and he'd be one of the guys that you're you love to hate, but you love him when he's on your team. I remember as a 8-year-old and, you know, going to Olympia and those Sunday matinee games and the Flyers, the Broad Street Bullies came into town, and he was always in the middle of things, and his stick or his mouth or his abrasive play, but the guy always worked. And, you know, the guy had some offensive skill. If you look at his career, You know, there's times where he led the league in scoring. He had 116 points, and you know, he's playing a rough role. He actually has diabetes too. He did this all with diabetes, and when it was a disease that really wasn't figured out in the early, late 60s and early 70s, you know, it was tough to manage. So he did this, and I always was amazed at how his engine was always going. You know, he's a very relentless forechecker and just a gritty player. And you know, even with the Soviet Summit Series in 72, and you know, when he two-handed one of the top players over in Russia, and I think it was Karlamov or whatever, it was blatant, and he did it on purpose. And you know, it's just the kind of guy he is, just to turn the tide of that series. And he did do that. And he was like that in the NHL too, a gritty guy to play against and very productive point wise too. So yeah, no surprise there. And who else we got on that list? Brian Propp was a good playoff player as well. And
I was going to say, did you notice who's not in the top five of Flyers all time playoff points? You cut out there.
What's that?
Your audio cut out. Did you notice who's not in the top five?
I think Eric Lindros, right?
That is correct. He's nowhere near the top five. Just going back to, it was a while back, we talked about guys deserving to be in the Hall of Fame. And to me, it's just another mark of, it brings up another question mark. Why is this guy in the Hall of Fame? No cups, and 11th, I think he's 11th in the franchise history in playoff points.
Well, Joe, think about it. What did he have, like six, I think we said 6 years in the playoffs with the Flyers? And he has 57 points. So what's that? You know, that's about maybe, you know, nine points a playoff season. You know, that's not going to get it. And really, really, he had a couple playoffs where he was in 20 points or something like that. So let's figure like four of those playoff years, he didn't even come close to reaching 5 points. You know, they were probably first round exits. But it's a huge disappointment. He's always been an overrated player to me as far as the hype that surrounded him. But you know, Bobby Clark, you know, that's a given. That's consistency there. And Brian Propp, the same. And Bill Barber and Rick McLeish. You know, those guys are, you know, a true tale of consistency. And, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, what you do and what you can do when you're consistently a good player and you do it throughout the season into the playoffs.
Right. 15 is Brett Hall, the St. Louis Blues, 117 points. And of two cups that Brett Hall won, neither of them came as a member of the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah. A lot of this these points were probably with helpers from Adam Oates.
Yeah, they didn't even make, I'd have to look, but when he was with the Blues, they never even made a Stanley Cup final. They didn't have too many deep playoff runs either. So he's,
again, he went through, had to go through Chicago and all those Norris battles. And there was always the rivalry between either he always had the North Stars, Detroit or Chicago to go through. But I'm going to say this. It's amazing Adam Oates isn't even on this list.
Right.
Well, how many years did he play? Probably because he only played a few years with them. That's probably why.
Yeah, it was only a few years.
Yeah, I'm thinking he played more, but he didn't. But, you know, I'd be curious to find out how many total points Brett Hull has, you know, because he played with Dallas on some good teams there. He played with Detroit, obviously, a couple years, and, you know, had some good playoff point scoring there, at least another 35 points with them. Figured two playoffs, he probably had 20 one season and probably 15 the other point-wise. I'd like to know that. But, yeah, but he's probably pushing 200 if you add all his playoff
appearances. Yeah, he's got 190 in 202 games total in his career.
Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah, they never, I'm just looking at his time with St. Louis. Yeah, they never played more than 13 playoff games when he's with the Blues. So that's about two rounds or fewer for the most part.
Yep, that's two rounds or fewer. And then look at all the talent on that list. You got Bernie Federko and finished his career with Detroit, and that's the player we traded Oates for. Mm-hmm. Dougie Gilmore, that's an interesting name on there. And I think Jaden Schwartz is going to probably shoot up the third in that list by the time it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's getting close. He's their active leader right now with 50 points.
Yeah, him, Tarasenko, and Petrangelo are going to probably shoot up to third, fourth, and fifth on that list.
Yeah.
Just Bernie.
Yep. Yep. 16 takes us Gilbert Perreault, the Buffalo Sabres, 103 points.
Now, this guy's amazing, Joe. I actually played on the same junior team organization, not the actual team, but when I played with Verdun, we were formerly the Montreal Juniors, which is what Gilbert Perreault played for with Rick Martin. And I think Rennie Robert, maybe all the whole French Connection line played with the junior team, and they played at a different rink, not in Verdun, but in a small suburb in Montreal. I forgot what it was called, Frank Sauvé Arena or something like that. You can Google it. It's an old building, and in our dressing room, it was kind of a smaller version of the Montreal Forum. We had the same plaques and everything that you see in the famed dressing room of the Canadiens. And the history on these team plaques, I mean, a lot of guys that came through the Montreal junior system. And this guy was one of them. He played with some Memorial Cup teams in the late 60s. Great, great list of names on that team. I believe Jimmy Rutherford even played, with the Montreal junior. But, he came out of nowhere. This guy was one of the a cut above the rest during his time there. He could really skate, a big, rangy forward, probably one of the more skilled players in the league at the time, and just real dynamic. Probably one of the few NHL players that would resemble the Russian player when they first came over here and started dominating NHL teams. This guy was that skilled. So, always a favorite of mine. He'd definitely bring you out of your seat. A very exciting player. He could play in any era. So, this is one of those guys. We should do a show one day, Joe, where we're talking about players that could play back in the 60s and 70s and still fit in today's game. That would be an interesting show, because this guy is definitely one of those players.
For sure. Yeah, and as we talk about a franchise and a rebuild, we talk about Detroit. The Sabres haven't made the playoffs since 2011, and because of that, there's not a single player on the Sabres roster that's recorded a point as a Buffalo Sabre, so they don't have an active playoff point leader.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing right there. It's a better franchise than that. They, like I said, I believe they're one of the teams with Anaheim that if they go to a certain playoff format, they'll be in.
Yep.
So that's I'm sure that city is thirsting for something, and they've had some close runs with Hasek, but they're a better team than that, better organization. You think they would have more? I'm not sure they ever don't. They don't even have a cup in their stable, do they?
Nope, they do not.
That's something, a dark horse, if people want to, like the underdog, you might want to root for that franchise, because there are a lot of great history in that that Buffalo uniform, for sure.
Number 17, Al MacInnis, the Calgary Flames, all-time leader with 102 points. Active leader Sean Monahan with 13.
Another guy that's played with multiple teams, had some success with St. Louis too. If you go back to that list, let's check it out. He had 58 points with the Blues, so that's a nice chunk of points. almost 160 points with playoff points for a defenseman, Joe. What's that tell you?
Yep. Yeah, he was good. I feel like people don't talk about Al MacInnis enough just because of the Paul Coffey and Ray Bourque. And Al doesn't get his love on a regular basis.
He doesn't. He's one of them guys that I think his personality had a lot to do with that, too. He just wasn't his style wasn't, like, overly flashy. But, man, he could shoot the puck probably better than anybody in the game, even to this day. Had a heavy shot. Osgood felt it a few times. He's letting in some long bombs from him from the center right, red line there. But this guy... Definitely a quiet, unassuming superstar, and like you said, he's a. I would probably throw him in my underrated category as well because just because of the love that he didn't seem to get, it seemed to always go to, like you said, Coffey, Ray Bourque, and the boys. So yeah. Great player though.
Team 18. It kind of surprises me that he has this many points because Ottawa's not really a playoff team, but Daniel Alfredson, Ottawa Senators, he's got 100 points in the playoffs, and yeah, that just number seems high for me with the success Ottawa's had in their history since they came back in the league.
Yeah, Daniel Alfredson was always the favorite son, so to speak, of Ottawa. I know he's from Sweden and all that, but they kind of took him under their wing, and even when he came to Detroit, you could tell he didn't want to leave, Ottawa. It was one of those things, though, where he's always been a consistent performer. And I think they made a couple deep runs on a couple teams with him, and which probably gave him half of those points. So, it's just one of those things where he's never really had a great supporting cast with them. Out of the forwards on that program, so it's just a lot of Ottawa games were Daniel Alfredson's show. So, but they always to me had interesting teams, but his style definitely fit the playoff mode. He was cut from playoff cloth, man. The way he played the game, and he was a hard nosed Swede, and that's what they loved him for there.
Yep. Number 19. If I were to say who is the Vancouver Canucks all-time franchise leader in playoff points, this guy's name probably wouldn't be called with Bure and the Sedin twins having played in Vancouver, but I'm glad he's the leader because I loved him growing up. Trevor Linden, franchise leader in Vancouver.
Yep, Trevor Linden's a Mr. Vancouver. He's to me what, just a good hard-nosed leader, well-respected in the league. I believe he led the players' union, too, one of the reps. Usually they only appoint that to players who are pretty well-liked across the league. But everybody respected his play. Hard-nosed player. That's another guy, it was good that we got to see the Vancouver Canucks in 94 make that run against the Rangers because we really got to see what Trevor Linden was all about in his career because a lot of times Vancouver underachieved. They had a lot of talented teams, but the West Coast and the fact that, they were always the late game, most of the time on Hockey Night in Canada that, a lot of people didn't know about this guy. He was kind of a hidden gem. So I'm glad the hockey world got to see him in 94 along with Bure and a few other exciting players on that 94 Vancouver team. And, it's one of those things where he had some international success as well. And I think it was a great career. But, yeah, it makes sense that he's the leader for sure.
Yeah, number 20 to round out what we're going to cover today is the only man that appears as the franchise leader for two franchises. He put up 252 points, the only guy in NHL history with over 200 points for a franchise. with the Edmonton Oilers, and he's the LA Kings all-time leader with 94 points, Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, Wayne came in LA and, you know, brought hockey up a level there and surrounded by some guys, and he, you know, that also flourished, like Bernie Nichols. We spoke about him earlier, one of the shows, and, you know, a lot of guys around him were putting up career numbers just with his presence. But if you look at Wayne, I think he's going to be passed by Kopitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably within the next 5 years, as long as LA comes back to relevance. And, you know, I think Kopitar will pass him in that regard. So, you know, Gretzky will be off that list of leading two teams. But yeah, he was definitely, you know, a different player in LA. I mean, I saw Wayne kind of come back to the pack because he was one later in his career, and, you know, just a style of play in the 90s was a lot more straight to the cuff. And, you know, with LA, and you saw it with his St. Louis years, and then a couple over with the Rangers, his last year there. You saw a player that didn't put up, you know, maybe marginal numbers. What was it, 60 to 70 points possibly, and, you know, towards the end of his career. And, you know, you saw a more normal Wayne Gretzky. The game passing him by a bit, but for the most part, he was still in a run and gun league when he got to LA. And I believe, well, how many years did he play in LA, Joe?
He was there 7 years, seven okay. or eight.
I'm wondering how many points he put up in those 7 years in the regular season, but you know, you think. 94 points, and I'm guessing they made the playoffs every year that he was there. I'd be surprised if they did.
They made it the first 5 years he was there. They missed the last three, and he was actually traded to St. Louis that third season. Yeah, that's they got traded to St. Louis, and that's the year that St. Louis made the playoffs. Yzerman picked his pocket and scored that overtime winner on Casey, the highlight reel winner.
Yep, he turned that puck over in the neutral zone. I remember that.
Yep,
but you really didn't notice him in St. Louis either. It was like during that playoff series. He was just another player to me, and you know, that's where the bigger players were coming in that could move, and you know, defenses were kind of, you know, that was right around New Jersey when they were locking things up in the neutral zone. So yeah, point productions went down quite a bit.
Yeah.
Especially with all the bigger players that could be skilled guys as well. Like Kopitar is a perfect example of that. Just a big rangy forward that can score. But I'd probably the 90s, I'd be surprised if there was a lot of 100-point scorers in the mid 90s up to 2000s. So
yeah, no, he did. He definitely, like you said, the last couple of years in LA. And then with his time, he finished up with the Rangers. I mean, he still put up over a point a game, but it was mostly as a playmaker. He didn't crack 30 goals. They only scored 9 that final season with the Rangers. But yeah, different change. He was still able. He was still smarter and thought the game through better than everyone and could find everyone. But as far as him creating space and putting the puck in on his own, that definitely caught up to him there the last handful of years.
Well, you know how Bobby Orr, like, I remember Bobby Orr came, like, there was a big, big talk about him missing that 72 Summit Series with the knee injuries, okay? They said if he was there, Team Canada would have been a different story. They wouldn't have taken for granted the Russians, and the Summit Series wouldn't have had to go 8 games or whatever it was. You know, Paul Henderson's, you know, important goal there, probably one of the biggest goals in Canadian hockey history. But segue to 76 in the Canada Cup, Bobby Orr played on one leg in that series, and basically that was his last hurrah. I kind of liken that to Wayne Gretzky in 93 when the Kings made that playoff, improbable playoff run there. and end up playing Toronto in that really, really heated conference final that took LA to the Cup Finals there against a Montreal team that won probably 11 straight in overtime, which will never be duplicated again. But Gretzky had 40 points in that playoffs. That's incredible. So that, to me, was his Bobby Orr moment as far as his last hurrah. I don't think Gretzky was ever the same player, and that was the closest I've ever seen him to his stint, like even like 4 years earlier with the Edmonton Oilers when he was dominating playoffs. It's just crazy how he had that like four-year gap. Not sure what he did in between those 4 years, if he even came close to that. I would be surprised, but 40 points is a ton of points in a playoff.
Yeah, yep, it is a lot of points in 20 games. That's yeah, he's putting up over 2 points a night. He did it a couple times in the playoffs.
It's like the fourth most in a single postseason, it says.
Yep.
And he owns the record for at 47, so that had to be done when he was with Edmonton.
Yep.
And he also owned the third and fifth place totals with 43 and 38.
Mm-hmm. Yep, all with the Oilers. Yep.
Pretty amazing.
Yep, yep. Well, all right, well, that's 11 through 20, the all-time franchise playoff points leaders. We'll round out the list with 21 through 31 when you hear from us next time. Joe and Tom, we'll see you back here on the lighter side.